That song is obviously appropriate for our study tonight. As we continue to think about the subject of peace, inner peace, calmness of spirit, serenity, the opposite of turmoil of spirit, of anxiety, of distress. The episode that this song relates was a time when the disciples had not grown in their faith to a point where they had that degree of calmness in the midst of a storm. They panicked and they wondered if Jesus cared about them. How many of us would love to have that calmness of spirit 100% of the time? How many of us do? I would be surprised if anybody would raise their hand. And if the apostles were here, they would not raise their hands either. Because I think as we think through this whole idea of peace, it's something that is learned. And it is something that we grow into throughout our life. And but what I wanted to talk about tonight, this morning we talked about peace with God. I'm going to move to the idea of peace within ourselves and inner peace, and talk about that as it relates to being able to find peace in prayer. Our passage, the key passage tonight that I want us to think about, is of course in Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4, passage that we have read many times. Where the Apostle Paul says, verse 6, chapter 4, be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, shall guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. King James Version says, be careful for nothing. And Randy and I were doing the TV program the other night, and we were reading in 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 32, and the way he said it there in the King James Version was, I would have you without carefulness. We both kind of did a little bit of a double take on that. But after you think about that, and other versions like the New International Version says, I would like you to be free from concern. And we sing the song, free from all care, happy and bright. Jesus is there. He is the light. Free from care. Free from being overly concerned. We're talking about the idea of having inner peace, not being anxious. But I want to say at the outset that we can put an unrealistic interpretation on that passage. In other words, we could send people away sometimes by things that we say with the guilt trip that if they ever are worried or anxious about anything, then they just shouldn't be. Should never be worried or anxious about anything. And that's not really realistic. Somebody goes out. She's supposed to be in at 11 o'clock. 3 a.m. rolls around. She's not there. And the parent is very worried. Calls a brother. Says, my daughter's not home. He says, listen, just pray about it. And don't worry. Just go to sleep. I'm sorry. Not going to happen. I might get in my car and drive around town looking for her. But that's not what we're talking about. In fact, fact is, sometimes when we do fret or we worry about a problem, then we find a solution to it. When we're anxious about something, we're proactive, and we address that aggressively. We resolve that problem. On the other hand, sometimes when we're just too calm and detached from it, we let some problem grow and fester to a point where it becomes worse and escalates instead of aggressively resolving that issue. But there are ongoing cares. There are ongoing worries. Anxieties that put people into states of depression. They consume us. They distract us from God's Word. They cause us to focus totally within ourselves to the point that we're not helpful to anybody. And we just sit and worry about things all the time. And Paul says here in verse 6, don't be anxious. Peter would echo his sentiments in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7, another comforting passage, encouraging passage to Christians, when he says, cast your, some versions say, cares upon him. Mine says anxiety. Cast your cares upon him because he cares for you. Well, somebody would say to Paul, you just don't understand. You really don't understand what I'm going through. I mean, I have some very difficult circumstances. Well, what about Paul's circumstances? And when he wrote that letter to the Philippians and he gave them that instruction, where was he? He was in prison, in Rome. He was in uncomfortable circumstances. He was scheduled to go on trial. Had to stand trial before the Caesar of Rome. He had no information as to whether he would live or die, absolutely. He wasn't sure what the outcome of that would be. He knew there were brethren who were taking advantage of their opportunity because he was in jail to preach and to sort of promote themselves. I would say that Paul understood exactly what care and anxiety meant. But verse 6 says he found peace through prayer. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God that passes all comprehension shall guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. So if you want inner peace, this is where you can find it. We're talking about peace and where to find peace through prayer. I'd say Jesus is our perfect illustration, our perfect example. Why don't we look back at him for a moment. Matthew 26, verse 36. He's in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he says to his disciples, sit here while I go over there and pray. And verse 37, he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and distressed. And then he said to them, my soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me. Interesting. He says he began to be grieved and distressed. King James Version says that he was exceedingly sorrowful. New International Version says he was overwhelmed with sorrow. And the New King James Version said it was sorrowful and deeply distressed. That's our Lord. And we can imagine the challenge and the anguish that he would have faced. He knew that he was about to face tremendous suffering. He was going to be beaten. He would be scourged. He would have thorns stuck in his skull. He would be ridiculed. He would be spit upon. He would have nails driven into his hands and his feet. He would have to hang on a cross for 6 hours, probably naked. And he would have to take the sins of the world on his shoulders. You can understand why he was greatly distressed. Isaiah 53 attempts to give us some idea of the kind of distress that he faced under those circumstances. Isaiah 53. And he said, verse 6, all of us like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way, but the Lord has caused the iniquity of us all to fall on him. And 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 21 says that he who had no sin was made sin on our behalf. It was all for us. I try to somehow, I don't know how you would get into his shoes and really appreciate Jesus' hatred for sin, but it must have been like living in a septic tank when he was here. That if you came from where he came from, where there was no sin and where everything was perfect, and to come into our world and to live among his people, people who should have been in some form like his resemblant of God's people, but they are corrupt. And it'd be kind of like ever been a part of a congregation that just is full of corruption, just a lot of bad people, and how hard it is to work in a group like that. Jesus had to live among his own people, corrupt as they could be, for quite a few years. And he had to bear and carry their sins on his shoulders. And in Gethsemane, he knew all of that was about to take place. So he is in Gethsemane praying. And he's fully aware of all that would happen. And he dreaded it. And it says he was distressed, he was overwhelmed, he was exceedingly sorrowful. And you might be able to imagine how helpful it would have been had his to have had someone with him close by to give him some support and encouragement and to help him bear the load. How many times have we appreciated when we're under some heavy load, bearing some burden, some stressful situation, some very anxious situation, and you're a child and your mom comes up, your dad, and puts their hands on your shoulders and says, I'm going to go with you through this. You're going to make it because I'm here to help you. I mean, that's unbelievably relieving. Or a wife has a husband that gives her a hug in the midst of a lot of stress and says, I'm not going to leave you in the midst of this. Or vice versa. And here are these disciples, and what are they doing? They're sleeping. Useless. But that's when he could have used that encouragement, that help. But he was not alone. He was not alone. John 16, let's read that passage real quick. John 16, verse 32. Another look at that night when he was with his disciples and he was telling them about the things that were about to come. And he says to them, verse 32, Behold, an hour is coming and has already come for you to be scattered, each to his own home, and to leave me alone. He knew what they were going to do. And yet, he says, I am not alone, because the Father is with me. When Jesus talked to his Father, he was not talking to himself. He was talking to his Father. When you pray, do you ever think that you're talking to yourself? You ever felt that way when you're praying? Is it like you're talking on a phone with nobody on the other end? If you feel that way, it won't be long till you don't pick the phone up too much because you feel foolish. You feel like it's useless. But Jesus did not see it that way. He was not alone. He prayed and he felt close to his Father. Hebrews 5 and verse 7 says that God heard his cries. He heard his cries when he was in the garden. And what's just amazing, turn over to verse chapter 19, is that after he was done praying, the story continues, his enemies show up, Judas shows up, betrays him, the mobs are there, their torches, their weapons. It would have certainly been an intimidating situation, to say the least. But in chapter 19... In chapter 19, whenever Jesus is there, and sorry, let's look back here in a minute. I lost my place. John chapter 18, verse 4. knowing all the things that were coming upon him, he went forth and he said to them, who do you seek? Jesus goes out to them, meets them, coming. Who do you seek? They answer him, Jesus of Nazarene. He said to them, I am he. And Judas, who was betraying him, was standing with them. And therefore, when he said to them, I am he, they drew back and they fell to the ground. And therefore, he asked them again, who do you seek? And they said, Jesus of Nazarene. And he said, I told you I'm him. If therefore you seek me, let these go their way. And from that point on, you really don't get any hints of Jesus being in distress or any anxiety or any grief. I mean, he is completely composed. He meets them. In fact, he, if it wasn't for him, they probably would have never crucified him. He helps them through his trial. He gives them the material they need to be able to continue to be able to accuse him or to make their case. Jesus had found peace through prayer. And that's impressive when you look at our Lord. I want to suggest there were two elements that were necessary, though. There are two elements necessary for him, and there are two elements that are necessary for us to find peace in prayer. And the first one is that Jesus totally submitted to his Father's will. I'm looking at Mark chapter 14, verse 36. Again, he's praying in the garden. And his prayer is, Abba, Father, all things are possible for thee. Remove this cup from me, and yet not what I will, but what thou wilt. How often do I pray this first part? You know, if I am determined that things need to happen the way I think they ought to happen, then I will never find peace in prayer. I will fail. Because I'm running the show. You know. If I don't understand that it should be God's will and not my will, but your will be done, if I don't get that clear, if I think it's got to be my way, then I will not find peace in prayer. Because I'm running the show. I'm in charge. I pray to God, but then I'm kind of saying I'm in the driver's seat. And prayer becomes sort of just I'm going to get God on board so He can help me get what I think ought to happen done. And in trying to do that, we will not have peace. Jesus' prayer was, as He taught His disciples to pray, and therefore teaches us to pray, Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. We have to learn to pray that way. God's will is being done in heaven. Will His will be done on earth? That depends on me. In the sense that I must choose to let Him decide what things happen, and not me in my life. Jesus did that. He prayed, I don't want this. He did. He said, let this cup pass from me. He didn't want that. That was not His will necessarily to go through that. But He went to the cross because He was ready to do God's will, even though it ran counter to what He had asked for in prayer. He said, not my will. I don't want to go to the cross. Is there some other way? Let this cup pass from me. But He said, your will first. I'm willing to submit my will to your will. And He did that. He totally submitted to God's will. Two examples from the Old Testament real quick. Turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 3. Two examples of others that had that same disposition. Look in 1 Samuel chapter 3. We all know Samuel. God's call to Samuel. He was lying down at night. God calls to him. He hears God calling, but he thinks it's Eli, the high priest. So he goes to Eli. Eli said, I didn't call you. So he goes back and he lays down. He hears it again. Gets up, goes back to Eli again. I didn't call you. Goes back and lays down. Comes back a third time. Eli perceives the Lord's calling him. He says, go back and lay down. And when he calls you, say, speak, Lord, your servant is listening. So, you remember what the Lord told Samuel? He told Samuel, I am going to bring an end to Eli's house. His sons are corrupt. He didn't restrain them. I am going to destroy his house. So he goes back and he lays down. Try to put yourself in Samuel's shoes for a minute. Wouldn't you dread having to tell Eli that? You know he's going to ask you. You know he's going to ask what you're told. Verse 15. Let's read a couple of verses here. Verse 15. So Samuel lay down until the morning. Then he opened the doors of the house of the Lord. But Samuel was afraid to tell the vision to Eli. Then Eli called Samuel and he said, Samuel, my son. And he said, here I am. And he said, what is the word that he spoke to you? Please do not hide it from me. May God do so to you and more also if you hide anything from me of all the words that he spoke to you. So Samuel told him everything and hid nothing from him. And here's the phrase I just want you to notice. This is what Eli said. He said, it is the Lord. Let him do what he pleases. Imagine that. You've just been told that God is going to bring an end to your house. And what are you going to say back? Well, he says, it's not my will, but thy will be done. It's the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him. That's impressive. To let God have his way. Let's look at one other place. Look in 2 Samuel chapter 15 for the second example of that. And this is in the life of David. And I mentioned this morning that Solomon, David's son, Absalom, David's son, rebelled against him, conspired against him. David has to flee from the city. This chapter recalls that. And he's leaving the city. And Zadok and all the Levites come behind him and they're bringing the Ark of the Covenant. And David is in distress. He is in sorrow. And he's wanting to go with David. And look down in verse 25. King speaks to Zadok. And he says, return the Ark of God to the city. If I find favor in the sight of the Lord, then he will bring me back again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he should say thus, I have no delight in you, behold, here I am, let him do to me as seems good to him. If we are overwhelmed with cares and anxieties and distress, and we go to God in prayer, if we're determined that it has to come out the way we think it ought to come out, that we know the best answer to that situation, then we will unlikely have peace in prayer. But if we go with the spirit of Eli and David and Jesus as our models, and we say, Lord, here it is, and whatever you do, you're the Lord, and you decide this, then we can find peace. Because we know something. And that's going to be the second element. The second element that's important to finding peace in prayer. And that is, we need to have the element of trust in our prayers. That's a word that we use frequently, but I find very difficult to implement in some circumstances. Ironically, the song, that last song that we sang in our practice was called For You Have Promised. And I was noticing the first verse of that has some application here. He says, it was a prayer. And he says, oh Father, draw me close to you. Calm now my spirit. Peace renew. And yes, I know you hear, for you are near. For you have promised, and I believe. Boy, does that reflect us? You have promised, and I believe. We go to God in prayer. We pour out our hearts. We say, not my will, but yours. And we trust Him. And then we wait to see what He's going to do. We have to believe that He's listening. We have to believe that He cares. And His answer will be just right. That it's better than anything I could come up with. I didn't say this. Somebody else said this, but I liked it. And it made me think of Terry Reese's sermon a few weeks ago on God's view versus my view. But the statement was, we don't want God, or don't we want God to answer our prayers in keeping with His eternal vision and not our narrow vision? Don't we want Him to answer us in accordance with His vision, which goes far beyond what I can see, rather than mine? Don't get me wrong. Okay? God invites us to come to Him. He wants to hear from us. He wants us to tell Him exactly what we want. He wants to know, and He does give us our requests if they fit into His plans. I don't want that to be misunderstood. First John, or otherwise it's not worth praying. 1 John chapter 5 tells us, gives us some certainty about that. Chapter 5, verse 14 and 15 of 1 John. He said, this is the confidence which we have before Him, that if we ask anything according to His will, He hears us. And if we know that He hears us in whatever we ask, we know that we have the request which we have asked from Him. So He wants us to pray, and He wants to be able to fulfill our requests as they fit into His will. But He wants us to be completely submitted to Him, and He wants us to learn to trust Him. And we need to know that while it may not always come out exactly the way I want it to come out, it will come out better than I could have imagined. It will happen better than I could imagine. And He does it on His own time. That's another element that I need to factor in my prayers. That we may not see the answer to our prayer even in our lifetime. He answers it in His own time. He didn't fulfill His promises to Abraham, all of His promises in Abraham's lifetime, but He certainly answered, fulfilled those promises in a far better way than Abraham could have ever imagined. He's still fulfilling them today. But you can always count on His answer, that it will turn out just right, exactly like it needs to be. And we need to be confident of that. Let's go back to Philippians 4 one more time. Just want to read verse 6 once more. Philippians chapter 4. Be anxious in everything. No. Be anxious in nothing. But in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. The word thanksgiving is there. And I want us to think about that. When we are surrounded by cares and troubles and anxieties, and I think it's very easy to forget what God has done for us in the past. But we need to be, in the midst of those anxieties, we need to be thanking God. Even this past year, Monica has struggled with some different physical challenges. And other people here have had issues too, as well, physically. But you know, I learned that in the midst of troubles like that, it's hard to be thanking God. We need to remember the years in the past when we didn't have any problems. You know, when we didn't take any medication, or when we played sports or did hiking or did know, different activities that where there was just no repercussions, just easy. We were blessed, and remembering those things and thanking God in the midst of some of these challenges that we face now is important. Thanksgiving comes on three levels, I think. One is the non-existent level, when we don't even think to of God as the giver of all the good things that we have. James 1 and verse 17 says He is the giver of every good and perfect gift. Some people never even think to give Him thanks. They don't give Him credit for all the good things that we have. Thanksgiving also comes on a verbal level. We teach our kids to say thank you. Some of the first words that we ever teach our kids is, we emphasize that. You need to say thank you when somebody gives you something. And Monica tells a story about when she's a kid and her mom, they went to the bank or something, you know, they passed suckers through the windows, and they used to at least. And one of them didn't say thank you, I think. And so she took it and gave it back. They didn't get it. And remember that. You know. That's a social grace. It's good. Good. We should practice that. Kids should say that. We should say that. Adults should say that. But you know what? Even non-believers say that. You know, a lot of non-believers are very thankful people. Very, will tell you thank you. But a person can say it 100 times a day and not be really thankful. I think a higher level of thankfulness is thankfulness with sincerity and I'm going to say that this thankfulness, perhaps, is a thankfulness that anticipates an answer. That God will, He already anticipates that God will take care of the issue and is thankful before it ever even comes to fruition. He has no doubts. He has no uncertainties. He knows God will hear and respond. He knows that the issue, whatever it is already being dealt with. And he can go ahead and thank God, knowing that God's response will be the best possible response. And I will, since we have a few minutes, I'm going to read the passage that comes to that I thought about, and that's from Psalm 3, when David was surrounded by adversaries. And at least the notation at the beginning of the psalm indicates it may have been written when he was fleeing from Absalom. But I just want you to notice this anticipation that God has taken care of the matter before it ever really even gets taken care of. He says, O Lord, how my adversaries have increased. Many are rising up against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God. Verse 3, But Thou, O Lord, art a shield about me, my glory, and the one who lifts my head. I was crying to the Lord with my voice, and He answered me from His holy mountain. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustains me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for Thou hast smitten all my enemies on the cheek. Thou hast shattered the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Thy blessing be upon Thy people. It's interesting to notice how he shifts backwards and forwards in this. This confidence, I was crying to the Lord with my voice, and He answered me from His holy mountain. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustains me. I will not be afraid. Notice this absolute confidence he has when he prays. It's when he prays, it's a done deal. It's already taken care of. He can lay down and pray. He doesn't know what the answer is going to be. Doesn't know exactly all the details of how God's going to work this thing out. But it's worked out. And he can leave God to take care of that. And he can lay down and put his head on the pillow with confidence. Because he's put it in somebody else's hands. Because he says, cast your cares upon me, for I care for you. He knows, he has confidence. We need to learn what it means to trust. That is a critical element in peace that comes through prayer is learning how to trust. You know, our kids know how to do that. They know how to trust their parents. They come and they ask. You know, they have some situation that happens at school. And they come and they tell mom and dad because it's too big for them to handle. And then they're okay because they know that mom and dad will take care of that. It's fixed. It's finished. Whatever they do, they're not worried about it because they will take care of it. They can count on their parents to deal with that. Some situation happens in a ball game or some kind of, you know, sports, or, and they it's out of their control. They say, mom, dad, can you handle this? I don't know what to do. And if that's appropriate, then it's mom and dad take care of that. They have confidence. They have absolute trust. And we have to have the same kind of trust and confidence in the Lord. The things we face are bigger than us. He does not ask us to resolve all of those type of things, just like David. It was bigger than he was. But he knew that the Lord cared for him. He knew that if he cast his cares upon him, God would take care of that. Well, let's close and bring this to a close. I do want to read this last passage because it's a good passage in the New Testament that I rarely read, and it's good. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 8 through 11 is where Paul is recalling some things that happened when he was in Asia as he's writing the Corinthians. And he's dealing with situations that are difficult. And here's what he says. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, beginning in verse 8. For we do not want you to be unaware, brethren, of our affliction which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened excessively beyond our strength, so that we despaired even of life. Indeed, we had the sentence of death within ourselves. These are people who are distressed, they are anxious, they are under difficult circumstances. They cannot see any way out. They despair of life. Indeed, they have the sentence of death within ourselves. Why? In order that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead, who delivered us, that's past tense, who delivered us from so great a peril of death and will deliver us. He on whom we have set our hope, and He will yet deliver us. You also joining in helping us through your prayers, that thanks may be given by many persons on our behalf for the favor bestowed upon us through the prayers of many. There's the apostle. They had much distress. And God allowed them to be in really difficult circumstances, ones that made them where they could not see any way out, because it taught them to trust in someone other than themselves. Don't you think God that might do that to us sometime these days? That He might allow us to be put in circumstances that are maybe beyond our ability to control them, so that we might learn to stop trusting in ourselves and learn to trust in Him, so that He can show us His glory and bring honor to His name and teach us and help us to grow and mature. But you saw how much emphasis there was that Paul had in there on prayer. That he petitioned, not only was he praying, but there was petition that he asked of the churches with confidence that just like God had delivered him in the past, He will deliver him in the future, and yet He will deliver him again, so that more grace and more thanks would be given to God, and that His name would be honored. Peace can be found in prayer. You may not have mastered it. You may not have found it, but it's our lacking. It's not because God is incapable. So God bless us in our effort to find peace through this avenue that He's given us, to speak to Him as our Father. So open your songbooks, 332, 321, Jesus, I come. Opportunity to come to God, seek Him, and trust in Him. Learn what it means to believe in Him. If you want to do that tonight, begin your life, maybe as a Christian, this is the time to do that. And if you just need to improve your prayer life, trust in Him more, this is certainly a good time to make more commitments to prayer as well and find that peace that surpasses all understanding as we stand and sing.